you're a fitness professional, you need to know who you're working with. You need to know who the ideal client is. And then that's how you reverse engineer. So there's really no answer of like, are you high or low volume? Well, I'm volume that's appropriate for that person.
All right, man. Dude, it's been a while since I've had you on the podcast, since we had a chance to connect. But it's always good touching base. It's always good connecting again. We have so many mutual friends, even mutual clients at times where like you've done their training, I've done their nutrition, you've done my training, I've done your nutrition. So we've been connected for a long time, and I always enjoy conversations with you. So today I want to kind of, you know, you have coined this, which we're going to get into this too, this term for yourself or this name for yourself, the king of programming, which I loved when I saw that pop up on my feed. And I want to dive into all things programming, really. I just want to have a cool rapid fire style conversation about program design. And I think people are going to get a lot out of it because I think it's something that unfortunately people screw up quite often. And obviously there's a lot of different ways to program. And I found that there's an art to it. You know, there's principles to be followed, and we'll touch on some of that, but there's definitely an art to it. So it's always cool talking to different professionals and experts in the field because everybody has their own way of doing it. So first and foremost, man, give yourself a little bit of an intro and a nutshell for those who maybe have not heard of you or haven't listened to the prior podcast we did together because it was a while back.
Yeah. So I've been involved in fitness for 2 decades professionally. I went online in 2015. I was actually a gym owner back then. And I started online programming for CrossFit gyms. And I'll be honest, I think CrossFit gave me a pretty distinct advantage as far as really being able to blend both strength and conditioning in a very seamless way. So when I started online, Cody, it was kind of opened up this whole new world. I think like a lot of people are seeing, especially with COVID, that you can do really, really well online. And in some ways, you can actually do better, I think, you know, serving people. So when that took off for me, it was kind of like, I just saw an opportunity to move online and potentially just do things better, do things differently, as well as obviously have the freedom, be able to really like kind of write your own ticket and not be trading time for money. So, you know, kind of, you know, just kind of skipping to the good stuff. I went from, you know, being a strength coach, an intern. I started training people when I was, I would say probably realistically 20, but I started training people when I was like 18, and then I got a personal trainer certificate, and I'm almost 41 now. So it's been a minute training people. And then, you know, I think that really helped transition into the online space and be able to really do things in a way that made sense, but was also scalable and allow us to really build. So, you know, kind of long story short, I started with CrossFit gyms, moved more towards individuals. CrossFit was kind of one of those things for me where it was like, I didn't agree with some of the methodology anymore. And a lot of the ways that actually got me in to programming for CrossFit gyms was that we were doing things different. I had a background with the conjugate system and just from kind of the strength and conditioning world, then stepping into CrossFit. So that kind of gave us a leg up, you know, doing things in what I would say is a more intelligent way. I don't think people need to do kipping anything. I don't think people need to do Olympic lifting for high reps. I think they need to do basic things and do them very well. So that was kind of my first go at online training. And fast forward to current day, you know, we're working with individuals one-on-one on a subscription basis. So we've got a low ticket subscription, $30 a month. We've got two different services. And a lot of them are former CrossFitters that have kind of had their, you know, come to Jesus moment, if you will, where they realize that, okay, this is fun, but is it sustainable? Probably not. A lot of those people tend to gravitate towards my style of training. So right now we're serving about 1,000 people in our app. And the other end of it is kind of the B2B, working with coaches that are trying to write better programs. So we launched a certification this past June, and looking to certify about 200 coaches this year. We've had about 70 coaches thus far go through. We're starting another cohort this February. So it's kind of I think you've probably seen this, that it's, especially with content, it's when you're working with B2C, you're working with individuals that just train, maybe they're not, you know, fitness professionals. And then you've got another kind of silo of people like me and you that are looking to potentially do what we're doing. They want to have an online business. They want to, you know, give up trading time for money. They want to start working with people on a remote basis, and they want to do well with it, right? So that's kind of become this other thing for me. And, you know, the king of programming thing is funny. My wife came up with that, and I didn't really like it. And I think a lot of people, it pisses them off. So I think I might be onto something. If it pisses people off, I remember Alex Ramosi saying, yeah, you know, if you're not pissing off one person every day, then you're not doing something right. And I think that, you know, it does piss some people off, but I know people like you that are you know, naturally more positive and are not, you know, just trolling and being haters, say the same thing. So it's kind of a funny like duality there between how people perceive that.
Yeah, it's true, man. I recently had something went kind of crazy on Threads, and it's something I posted a long time ago on Instagram, and then it started surfacing back up on Instagram because people were like making reels of it. But it was me just saying that trainers should be in shape. That's it.
Yeah, and yeah,
for some reason that pissed people off, and I was so confused. But I had so many people and clients reaching out to me, and they were like, "I'm so glad that you're in shape, and like it allows me to trust you more." And it's a wild concept, but to your point, I saw people getting mad, and I was like, cool, I'm going to repost this. I'm going to share it. I'm going to do another video on it because I want to trigger some people, because if you get triggered, it's probably because you have some kind of insecurity. Like when I saw you write King of Programming, I loved it because one, you're my friend. Two, I've heard the same advice, so I understand some of it. But also two, I know you're great at programming. So I was like, oh, that's great. Like that's dope. And I don't have an insecurity around programming, so it didn't trigger me. But people who might not feel the best about their own program design, you know, and if you're listening to this and, you know, that triggered you when you saw that, it's probably because you know that you're not great at programming.
Yes, I definitely agree with you. And I think we started doing program reviews this year on YouTube, and those have kind of gone a little bit haywire. My wife was like years ago saying you should review programs. And I was like, I don't really want to do that. It's not really like something I enjoy, but it has gotten, I would say, more enjoyable, because I think there needs to be some light shed on some of the stuff that people are doing, just asinine things. And they're, you know, trusting people that might have a big following. And it's like, oh, well, they look good and they have a big following. But yeah, those are not markers. I mean, I do think a trainer should be in shape, right? Like, hey, you should eat better and strength train, but I don't do it. I mean, that to me makes absolutely no sense. I would not listen to a financial advisor that was poor, you know, that was like homeless. Like, why would I do that? It wouldn't make any sense, right? So anyways, to your point, I think there's kind of a lot to delve into there, just with the human side of just how people respond to some of this stuff.
I loved seeing that you were doing that on YouTube. I thought that was great. It's something that it's funny enough, I actually thought about doing the same thing, but in a different lens. We were looking at getting back on YouTube, and we started getting on YouTube doing more of like a vlog style. But we had originally said, I was like, I think I want to do like review programs, but more so to educate people on hypertrophy. So it's like, I was going to do one on like 5-3-1, and, you know, is this good for muscle growth? When is it good for muscle growth? When is it probably not the best? And like so on and so forth. But then I saw what you did, and I was like, ooh, that's a more ballsy approach, but I like it because it's true. People need to understand this stuff. And I've personally worked with, and I'm not gonna say any names, but like I've worked with multiple influencers or people with big followings, some of which I program, I do their nutrition, everything, and what they put out is parallel to what I'm taking them through. So it's very transparent, authentic, and I'm like, cool, that's great. And then there's other ones, what they put out is polar opposite of what they actually do, because what they actually do is what I'm writing for them. And so it's been hard for me in the past when I have worked with some people that I'm like, well, you're not giving the best advice in that style of programming, or at least what you're saying the result's going to be from that, especially knowing that what is getting you your result is what I'm actually taking you through right now, which is crazy. But that's the landscape of fitness, man. So, no, I think it's great what you're doing. And I think, it's definitely, there's a lot of people who, I mean, we can say like Lane Norton, for example, does a great job of, sometimes it goes crazy with it, but he does a great job of calling people out on some of the BS you see with nutrition and such, but there's nobody filling that gap for programming. Like nobody's calling that stuff out on a large scale for programming, and it's needed. So I think it's amazing that you're doing it, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think, I do kind of enjoy doing them. It is nice. It's good to see some good programs, but I do think that we are living in a time where negativity gets engagement, unfortunately. I mean, unfortunately, if you put out like, you know, it's funny, the programs that I approve get the lowest amount of reach,
yeah.
right? So it's like, hey, here's a good program, but, you know, it's not as polarizing. It's not as controversial. And I think that, you know, that's just kind of a marker of what we're dealing with. I think Lane Norton does those ones because they probably get the most engagement, and likely he brings on a lot of people that maybe are a good fit for what his offerings are. So I think, you know, there's a lot to be said about just kind of like social media as a whole today. And it's an interesting place for sure.
It's very interesting. I try to tell people too, that like, you know, and obviously, you know, we're going to get into programming because I have a specific question on the reviews here in a sec, but I do think it's very, you got to be able to detach yourself from the emotional side of it, because sometimes what you got to do things to bring people in and notice you, which could be that stuff, but what actually sells them into the product and the service and the thing that you can really give them value to on a like consistent basis is the thing that's probably not going to get a lot of engagement, you know,
right.
Even random stuff that has nothing to do with fitness. I mean, like I posted a picture at the end of the year. I think you commented on it and I'm getting baptized in the picture, which I, you know, anybody, you can believe whatever you want to believe. I don't care about that. It doesn't matter to
sure.
me, but that was the picture I used. And tons of engagement, a lot of people reaching out, supporting it. And I also got more unfollows from that post than any post I've done in a long time. And it's just, you know, some people buy into you more in your personality because you're sharing authenticity, and some people run away from it because they don't like that, which is fine, but you got to be okay with that stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, for sure, man. There's a lot there. And I think that, you know, if you think about like who you're making content for, I know a lot of people make content for like top of the funnel, like people that are cold, they're not necessarily people that know, like, and trust them. And then, you know, for me personally, I like making content for the people that already know, like, and trust me. I like to provide value for those people that, you know, support me. And I think that, you know, yeah, trying to reach new people is great. You know, if that's the end goal, I think that is that really the most authentic
yeah.
version, if you're always trying to reach someone that might not even know, support you. And like, you know, sometimes we have like, I have like something that goes viral and it's like something that doesn't even really reflect like what I'm doing or who I am. And I'm like, yeah. this is fucking stupid. Yeah. You know, yeah. I don't care that this went viral or this gets me more followers. It's kind of like, I'd rather give someone actionable value that they can like take with them and apply right away and see a difference.
Yeah. And that's why at the end of the day, the best marketing, the best business plan is always just being phenomenal at what you do. Mm-hmm. Be great.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, speaking of these, reviews, one of the first things I wanted to ask you was what's the worst, maybe not, I mean, you can to say this too, if you want to, like the worst program you've seen, but like if you had to pinpoint maybe the worst, if whether it's one or like up to three practices that you see in program design after reviewing all these programs, seeing them online, actually literally reviewing for YouTube or just coaches coming on board for your certification, what are the worst practices, like the top three that you find pretty common?
It's just a neglect of the fundamentals, right? So we're not talking like going down any rabbit hole as far as complexity, or we're talking about very simple things. Like most people want to look good and feel good. We know that to be true. And then there's other aspects to it, such as people get into training and they realize, oh, wow, it's actually cool to get stronger. And of course, guys want to bench more weight and all those things that we, you know to be true. But as a whole, people need very basic things. So I just see a neglect of kind of the foundational principles of program design. Things like exercise order. Where do you put a heavy squat in your session? Where do you put a heavy press in your session? And, you know, you just see like kind of a just in the, and I don't think it's a neglect. I think that they just don't know what they don't know, right? So they don't have any exercise. They don't have any fundamental like exercise physiology where they understand basic tenets of program design, such as exercise order, exercise selection, and then obviously sets, reps, and rest intervals. Those are the things, right, that make a quality program. So on the other end of it, what I tend to see is that you have neglect of fundamentals. So that alone is like kind of enough to throw out a program. But then you throw in just an inordinate amount of volume. I saw a program from a very well-known guy. You guys can watch it on my page. It's, I don't know. There's probably 30 or 40,000 people using his program. And, you know, he had people doing two to 300 repetitions of abdominal work before they squatted and benched heavy. And I even said in the room, I'm like, I don't understand. Why would you have someone do 300 reps of, it was like GH, and I'm not talking just like sit-ups here. It was like GHD sit-ups. It was, you know, there was some anti-rotation work, and it was just a whole onslaught of the core, and kind of like on the same level. There wasn't a whole lot of diversity to it, but either way, you ask someone to do just an inordinate amount of volume to their core before you squat heavy, how is that going to go? I mean, I posed that question to the audience, like, how do you think this is going to go? So those are things that I tend to see with those programs that are really bad. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, like, people think, like, the more you put in, the more you get out. And you and I both know that the human body isn't designed that way. If it was, it would be a lot easier. Like, we probably wouldn't have a job. I mean, it would be like, okay, just do as much as you can do in an hour or even 2 hours time, and you're going to continuously get better. But we know that there's a point of diminishing returns. So I see stuff that is a neglect of the fundamentals, number one, I think is the biggest and most important thing. Number two, I see just almost borderline negligence on some way. Some of these programs are negligent. They're going to hurt people and, you know, potentially in a severe way. I'm not talking just you're sore for a week. I'm talking that, you know, getting something like rhabdo, where you have actual tissue breakdown in your bloodstream. I mean, there is some serious, serious cost of what is being asked of people. Now, you put someone into that has no training background, it's stuff that angers me when I see it. So we do see that. It's not with every program, but it's with a lot of them. I feel like there's a correlation between how well-known the influencer is and that stuff, unfortunately. That's what I've seen across the board. You have more followers, usually it means more volume, you know? So, and then, you know, you could get more granular with it, like, is there any, what does the conditioning look like? What are they attempting to do with conditioning? Is there any conditioning? And usually there's, you know, there'd be times where there's nothing. I did a well-known CrossFit athletes program recently, and wasn't the worst program, but it was just kind of a hodgepodge of everything. And, you know, there was a lot of people that commented that hated the review, who said, I should remove it. This is complete. You are giving the wrong information to people. And everyone that commented that disagreed with me said the same thing. You didn't watch every day this CrossFit athlete does a breakdown of what the program is for the day. And my response to most of them has been, it does not change the fundamentals of the program. I don't care what you say in your video. It does not change the exercises. It does not change the order. It does not change the structure. It does not change how the week goes. It changes nothing. Maybe it's valuable to you, but it changes nothing about the program. So, you know, that's kind of where I left that. I had a lot of people that I just like, you know, you're arguing with people that just don't know what they're looking at. Yeah. So what is the point of arguing with them if they don't know what they're looking at?
Yeah.
You know, it's like me trying to like convince someone, hey, you should change political parties. It's probably not going to happen. And I'm not going to die on that hill. I'm not going to ask someone to do that.
Yeah.
You know, or the religion, you know, it's just, those are things that are just not happening.
Yeah.
And people have to unfortunately figure that stuff out on their own. So, you know, that's, I guess, kind of it in a nutshell. There has been some good ones. It did Jay Ferrugia. Did his knowing it would be a good program. So, you know, I do want to show people what good programs do look like. And I even reviewed one of my own programs that I wrote, you know, a few years ago. There was a program that I put out for free after COVID, and just even went through it and said, hey, this is what I would potentially do different now. How would I structure this now versus then? And you know, programming is evolving. There's always things that we get new, you know, as far as that comes into our screen that we can make things better for future programs, right?
Right.
So
did, I'm assuming this, the last CrossFit one, you did put the name out because people were commenting in that way.
Yes, Matt Fraser's program. You guys can go check it out. I will be honest. I'm very, Cody, you know this about me. I'm very, what you see is what you get. I am done with engagement on social media. I have retired from it. And here's why. My best form of me is not arguing with someone that doesn't know about programming. It's not. I can't do anything. I can't provide any value to anyone by me arguing with people. So I'm just not doing it anymore. I used to respond to everything. It's just something that doesn't make sense. It doesn't add value to my life, doesn't add value to anyone else's life. And it is, you know, one of those things that just eats up space in your head. Mm-hmm. And I, unfortunately, am not good at just being like, I don't care. I do care. You know, I care about this stuff. So I do think about it, and it does take up space for me. So I'm putting this information out there. I don't care what you think of it. You can hate it. But I'm not going to sit here and argue with you back and forth for the next 2 days.
Yeah.
It's just not happening. And I know you're good at that. You're good at not engaging with just absolute nonsense.
Yeah. I've gotten better at it. It definitely, it's been hard in the past. And I still catch myself sometimes. There was a guy yesterday that commented on something, and he had some kind of argument about, funny, the real was, how long should your training plan be? And I didn't say 4 weeks, because I was like, well, it could be, you know, for compound lifts, it could be starting here, it could be up to here, for accessories here to here, it kind of depends on your experience level. And he was like, I mean, to him, he was like, that's just, you need at least 12 weeks of no changing anything at all. And I was like, actually, that's not supported by anecdote or research, and this is why. And then like his comment back was like just ridiculous and didn't refute anything. I was like, okay, I can't go any further. Like, one comment, well, I can't go.
I'll tell you, it takes an incredible amount of control to let someone get the last word. And that's something I've been working on. And that's something I've struggled with. I would argue back and forth with someone, I would go, you know, 6 or 7 comments. And I'm not talking like I'm giving you one word answers. I'm giving you like 100 words per response. So, you know, I think too, Cody, and I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I don't see like well-known coaches trolling.
No.
Like, do you see Joe DeFranco going across everyone's post and saying, hey, this is bullshit, this is wrong? I don't see any successful coaches doing that.
Mm-mm.
And I'm like, you know, and I don't troll anyone else. It doesn't make any sense for me to troll someone's post. It's hard enough, you know, putting stuff out there. But needless to say, I don't think even for myself, like, getting into these debates makes a whole lot of sense. Like, I put it out there. Here it is. Take it for what it's worth. If you hate it, you know, say you hate it. That's fine. But I'm not going to sit here and argue with you to try to get you to like it.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's a social media hack that these like fake ass business coaches try to tell these young coaches to do. Like, oh, here's how you get more engagement. Go find people who have your potential client and go comment on their post so that you get engagement. People see you. But like, great coaches are just being great coaches, and then they get more well-known because they're great coaches, not because they go do that kind of BS, you know?
Exactly.
But yeah, it's ridiculous, man.
I didn't even know that strategy. That's an interesting one. That's a new one.
So
I've never heard.
Yeah. So I've spoke at a couple, honestly, like a handful now of these like fitness business events over the years. Usually I'm speaking on like building a team or it's SEO stuff. And sometimes I just can't, like, I don't know, I hear some of the stuff going on or in the room or being spoken about, and I'm like, I just can't even, like, I don't like being here. Like, I'll just come speak and then I leave. I'm like, I just can't. This is just ridiculous. But, you know, on the topic of volume, because you brought that up as one of the things, and I agree with the other two. I've talked about exercise sequencing quite a bit, and I think that's a misunderstood one. So I love that you put exercise order in something that people mess up. And and that's a tough one too as a coach because, and in fact, before we get to volume, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I'll get this question all the time from using our app or even in my regular programs for one-on-one clients that my team works with. They're like, well, the gym's busy and I don't want to wait too long. Can I just swap this and this around? And it's hard because in the real world, if you're going to a public gym, sometimes, like, I get it. You don't have all the time in the world. But then the other part of me is like, no, like, that completely messes up the whole, like, you can't do that before that because you're going to create fatigue systemically, neurologically, your joint, like, there's a reason for this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. I just guess your thoughts. And if you agree on that, and that's kind of what you're saying with exercise order is like, there's a sequence to everything you do inside of a training session. It's not just a list of exercises.
Correct. Yeah. And I think obviously, you know, nothing is perfect, right? So if you're training at a commercial gym, then sometimes you have to make some concessions. So I would ask, you know, how often are you making concessions? How often are you having to like do things potentially out of order? And if it's once in a while, then I wouldn't really worry about it. It's a kind of like I think you say majoring in the minor, you know, you're like, oh, like, is this really going to make a difference long term? I would be more concerned with someone just sticking to the program long term. I deal with a lot of people that have home gyms. And we've really kind of carved out, like, a lot of people are training from home now and investing in home gyms. So I don't see that. And that opens us up to a lot of different styles of training as well. But needless to say, I don't think I have as many people. I don't tend to hear that one often, but I would agree with you. I mean, the order is very important. If you're going to squat or press or anything heavy or anything fast, ideally you would do that early on in the session. So is it ideal? No, but what is the alternative, I guess, is the question, right? Do they have to do a different movement, or maybe they do it in a different way, I guess? Maybe, you know, if you're squatting heavy, maybe the deadlift platform's open. Maybe they do a heavy hinge pattern, which could potentially throw things off too. So it's kind of like catch 22. You make a change. I always, you know, I'm sure you have this too. Like, people always ask, well, can I add this? Or can I do this in here? You know, I'm training for this. Can I add this? It's like, kind of no, because you add one thing, you have to remove something. It's not as simple as just like, hey, we just add it on. Yeah. It's just that simple. Then you just add it on and you get better. But we know that it doesn't work that way. And there is potential setbacks or even drawbacks if you do add in things that are not planned in the training plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And we obviously work with a lot of people who do go to public gyms. We do a lot of body composition stuff. So there's machines and all kinds of stuff like that too. Now, when we talk about volume, I think that, you know, I've been a proponent of higher volume programs when it comes to hypertrophy, but I always try to tell people that there's so much context involved. So I want to share my thoughts on hypertrophy, and then I'd love to get your just take on it, as well as if mm-hmm. you disagree, like we just the discussion around it, you know. Sure. But ultimately, I think that the problem most people have is that they assume, like you said, more is better. And a lot of times when we're talking about hypertrophy or muscle growth, volume is the key driver to hypertrophy based on research. The problem is that mechanical tension is actually what creates muscle and hypertrophy to happen. So I find that a lot of people will not get results and they're doing a ton of volume, but it's junk volume. It's not good quality. So you usually have to pull it back and go, hey, like, let's teach you how to lift before we start lifting a bunch. And there's also a bell curve to it. I find that when you're new, you don't need a lot of volume. You need to figure the fundamentals out. You got to order your exercises properly. You got to do everything you're talking about, most of which stays put your entire lifting career. It doesn't change. But as you develop, you need more volume to grow. But then you get stronger and you get better at creating that mechanical tension. So when you get more skilled at isolating tension in a muscle and you get stronger and you can lift heavier weights, at a certain point, you're getting more out of less. And then that volume kind of comes back down, because if you do too much volume while you're too skilled and too strong, you're just going to overtrain or hurt yourself, you know? And this is often where I see people go wrong, is that they don't know how to train well and they don't know how to train hard. And then last, I always try to tell people, well, what exercises are you doing? You know, obviously the goal is one thing, but somebody training for hypertrophy in a functional gym or a CrossFit gym or a garage gym might not be able to do as much volume as somebody going to a commercial gym using machines. Because if you're using a bunch of cables and machines and stuff, which depending on what season I'm in, and I'm more of a physique focused person, I might be doing a pretty high volume program, and people just look at numbers and they assume more is better. And it's like, no, like, this is not nearly as fatiguing as me getting under the bar or doing a deadlift or any type of back squat or press. If I'm using a hammer strength press versus a barbell press, it's just different, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is why I tend to, like, if people ask me, am I a high or a low volume guy? I'm like, man, it's just such a hard, it depends on so many factors. So I'm curious if you agree with those statements and how you kind of approach that question as far as like high versus low volume.
I would say yes. I mean, because I think that you've got this continuum of ability. You've got, like you mentioned, the beginners don't need as much. They need to learn how to move properly. They need to build good motor patterns. You've got people that kind of fall in the middle that maybe have built motor patterns and they're starting to push a little bit harder and feel what it's like to potentially strain under the barbell. And then you've got people that are advanced, people that have been just higher training age, been doing it a really long period of time. I tend to work with a lot of those people that have been doing it a longer period of time and know what it's like to push. They don't have the problem of pushing. So when you think about that, I guess number one, the question for anyone, right? If you're a fitness professional, you need to know who you're working with. You need to know who the ideal client is. And then that's how you reverse engineer. So there's really no answer of like, are you high or low volume? Well, I'm volume that's appropriate for that person. So the people that I work with are on the other end of the spectrum. They're advanced, 10 plus years of serious training. If you said, hey, what's your bench press max? They're probably can rattle off like their last five maxes that they've hit in the last 10 years, which is again, a kind of an indicator of someone that has a lot of experience moving weight. So with that said, those people, for me, that being my ideal client, I know that they can go deep with less. So if I say three sets of 8 to 10, people say, oh, it's not enough volume. I'm talking three sets of 8 to 10 where it is close to failure. 8 to 10 reps is one rep in the tank, right? So they're going deep and they're maybe doing three or four warm-up sets before they do those work sets, if you will. So maybe there's six sets, right? And you know, if we think about some of the supported research, like 60 total, 50 to 60 total reps, they might be getting that, but the ones that are the money sets for them are those work sets, and they can go deep with those. I know they'll go deep with them. Whereas the beginner, he's not really going deep because he doesn't have a well-developed nervous system to actually go deep and really kind of reap the rewards as far as adaptations, you know, developing high threshold motor units and really, again, kind of just going deep in the nervous system with big, big movements. So really the question I think is, who is the end user? You know, what is their training age like? What is their background like? Are they used to just using machines, or are they a skilled, like former powerlifter with like an elite total? I mean, we got 20 guys that deadlift in the 500 to 600 pound range on our trainings, on one of our training subscriptions. And these are just, you know, these are our regular dudes that are strong, right? So they've got just a wealth of information. They've got a wealth of experience. And when you tell them to do three sets of 8 to 10 reps, they are, and a lot of them are actually going to max, right? So if I say one rep in the tank, these guys are the kind of guys that will push it. They want to push themselves in every session. So, which is another thing to consider, because if you say one rep in the tank, they actually have zero or maybe even less than zero. Maybe they're going beyond failure. Some of them do that. You've got a whole other thing on your hand that you need to hands that you need to consider. So I think the answer for me would be it's unfortunately, it always does depend. It's not a bullshit answer. I know some people say it's a bullshit answer, but who is the person? It's like, who is the person? How long have they been training? What are they looking to do going forward? I've got a guy right now that deadlifts 710. He's one of our coaches in our app. He deadlifts 710. He's a gym owner. He's in his 40s. And he's like, I really want to get my deadlift higher. And I asked him, I said, well, that's, you know, something you probably could do in theory, but what is the cost of doing that? Mm-hmm. You get your deadlift up higher. Does that add value to your life? You already deadlift 710. Well, what do we really need to go with this? Unless you're like trying to compete in powerlifting, which I mean, to be honest, I don't know why someone in their late 40s he's got, you know, kids in high school. Why would you even want to do that? There's no money in it. It'd just be really for you. So I think these are legitimate questions to ask, like for this guy, hey, you deadlift 710. I mean, this guy benches 405. I mean, he's a strong, really strong and big dude. That's also, he's pretty jacked too. He's like, you know, 14% body fat and he weighs like 240. So anyways, not to like get off on a tangent here. I think it really does, you know, someone asks you, are you high volume, low volume? I'm whatever volume is necessary for that person. I tend to see that volume is not the issue with the people I work with. It's usually that they're actually already doing too much and doing it in the wrong way. They need more quality over quantity. And that's kind of something I've really touted as my thing. It's like, hey, let's really do three true work sets where it's one rep in the tank instead of just doing, like you said, junk volume. Oh, I do three sets of 12 to 15. And it's like, they probably could have done three sets of 30 with that load. You know, if we're being honest with ourselves, look in the mirror and say, hey, how many reps could I really do with that load? I think the answer would be different for a lot of people. Yeah. And that's something that we need to really like dig into as coaches and figure out what's it going to take to change that mindset where we're really doing what is being asked of us.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's, you laid out a couple of really good points there. And I think number one, there is research to support that right there, that people, they would put their 10 rep max on a bar for bench press. And the average rep count was 16 and the highest was 26. So it's like, and that's their 10 rep max. I think there was only one person who got less than 10. It was like 9. And there was like 30 people in the study or something. It was a good amount of people. So like maybe more, but that was one of many studies that have proven this. So I agree with you. And that's where it does get different when you're training a beginner to an intermediate to advanced. I think, and that goes to the other point that you made that's really good is, you know, warm-up sets. If people are only counting working sets, that's where I see them overtrain as well. Because if you have four working sets and you go that hard for four working sets, that's a different ballgame. But a newbie, maybe they do need four working sets. One, because they don't push themselves all the way to failure or close to it every time. And two, they don't lift heavy enough to actually warrant those, you know, those warm-up sets to really do much damage or cause much fatigue. Whereas, like, I was actually talking about this the other day, because on my leg day, I have two sets of leg press, just two sets. But it's because on a leg press, I mean, I could stack the plate. So by the time I get to my working sets, I have no business doing more than two sets. It's going to crush me. Like, so it's just, it's a different ballgame. But I love that answer, man. I think we're on the same page with a lot of that stuff. Next, I wanted to talk about specialty bars. You're a huge fan of them. I love specialty bars. I have a bunch at my gym. I just want to, like, I think it's an underutilized tool for a lot of people. And it's also a reason why a lot of people might want to get out of the typical big box gym and go explore some, like, cool strength training facilities or start a garage gym, because you can have more flexibility with this. But why are you such a big proponent of them? Like, what do people need to know or kind of convince them to invest in these specialty bars?
Yeah, specialty bars. It's funny, Cody. I was at a point where I had, like, an absurd amount of specialty bars. I think it was like around 20-ish specialty bars. Needless to say, I've whittled down to about half of that. So I think, as you know, I've gotten older, and I see this with a lot of people I work with that are my age and getting older. It's like, we really figure out, like, addition by subtraction. Like, what is the actual, like, minimum amount that I need, or what are the bars that I really use the most? So I've kind of whittled down, but I will say that, like, you know, you have something like a safety squat bar, which is a great tool for guys with cranky shoulders. It's a great tool. It's a different squat pattern, really. You know, obviously the fundamentals are very similar, but the placement of the bar, your ability to use, you know, your hands in a front position, as opposed to, like, being in more external rotation, where, again, people with cranky shoulders, it's tough. I think that's a phenomenal bar where you can use that for, I use that bar actually for pressing too, which is kind of weird. I wrote an article actually on Elite FTS about different ways to use the safety squat bar. So I use it for single leg work. I'll use it for pressing. I'll use it for, you know, JM press, which is an accessory movement for the triceps, which is a great, great variation. So that's one that's, like, always will probably never leave my gym. I definitely don't use it as much as I used to, but it has so many different things that you can accomplish with that. The other one I would say is I have an open trap bar that I actually just got this past year from Rep Fitness, and I've had trap bars my whole life, and I love the trap bar. Again, a lot of things that you can do with it, and it does change the gravity line of a deadlift. So it does, in theory, make the deadlift a little bit more like a squat pattern, which for some can be advantageous. Others would, you know, argue that, oh, well, it's really not a deadlift, and I get it. But for myself and for a lot of the people that train with me, I think it's a great, great tool to reduce some of the wear and tear on lumbar spine. And a lot of people do already have issues that tend to get flared up with conventional deadlifts. So I like it for that. I would add on that the open trap bar is a nice thing that has come into the, I don't know when, maybe the first time I saw it was like 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know. Maybe you saw it, you know. But I saw it like 4 or 5 years ago, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. You can do single leg work with it. You know, you can do a rear foot elevated split squat because it's open. So that's been something I've added to my repertoire. I really, really like. And, you know, aside from those two, neutral bar of some sort. There's a lot of different neutral bars for pressing. You've got, you know, different angles to them. I'd say just like a general football bar, Elite FTS or Rogue football bar, great bars to have. Again, cranky shoulders for the old school meathead that has probably benched more than he should have, is a good tool to have on hand. And like all of those other things, I like finding a lot of uses out of one thing. So you take one bar and you use it 10 different ways. To me, that's something that is a good investment. If you have one bar and you only use it one way, to me, that's not a great investment. I think there's other bars that I would certainly add in there that are nice to have, but definitely not necessary. Like a bamboo bar is a great bar. The Rhino Flex bar, which is like a bamboo bar where you can load more weight to it. It has an oscillation effect to it. Again, good bars. You could have, you know, more work to use them. You got to load them with kettlebells, and they're kind of clunky, but again, definitely something if you're, you know, investing in bars. I mean, those are things that you won't lose on. But I would say, You know, if you're just getting into it, safety squat bar is probably the first one I go with because you can just do everything with it. And then maybe the open face trap bar, which if I recall correctly, I think it was like right around $400, which is very reasonable for, you could buy a regular trap bar for $400 that isn't an open trap bar. And I think that's, you know, says a lot. It's a really good piece of equipment for the money.
Yeah. I love the open face. I have one as well. And it's being able to do even like split squats with it and stuff. Yeah. I think you had me doing a jam press with the safety bar. And I was so confused when I read it at first. I'm like, what? And then I did it. I was like, dude, I love this.
It's a nice one. It really makes a difference.
Yeah.
Especially like compared to dumbbells or even a regular barbell.
Yeah. I've never been a huge, like, not that it's a bad exercise, but skull crushers and jam press just never really felt great for me. But that one felt really good. Like that was a completely different feel.
That's one that tends to, you know, again, like the old school meathead that's got flared up elbows, yep. You use the safety squat bar and it reduces some of that, just that shearing. The way that it's loaded, and I'm sure there's a lot more work to it than I actually even know, but I know that it does feel better and it just gets into a good position where you actually get a really good stretch on the triceps and you know, put you in a position where you can really improve the strength, especially as it applies to pressing.
Yeah. 100%. All right. Next I have on the list is full body versus something like an upper lower split. But more importantly, how do you personally just determine if somebody should be on one versus the other? I would say those are probably the two most common splits for the average person is going to be a full body or an upper lower split, or it should be. I mean, you know, because those are probably the most common for, say, somebody training 4 days a week. How do you determine if somebody should do a full body versus an upper lower? And I would probably say specifically with a 4 day split, only because I think there's a much easier understood rationale for giving a full body program on a 3 day split because you full body each day rather than upper lower full. But if somebody's doing 4 days a week, what do you find? Do you find certain situations where a full body might be more advantageous for that person? And why would that be?
So what we teach in the certification, we teach three systems of programming. One is an upper lower split, more conjugate style split. One is a hybrid of both full body and upper lower. And then, of course, full body split. Now, what I look at for this process to determine what they need is we have to look at some data points. And this is what we teach coaches. I don't do this on my training subscriptions. They're not individualized. We do have one that's full body. And we do have one that's more conjugate based where it's, you know, lower upper, where you do essentially two lower upper sessions per week, one of them being heavy, one of them being for speed. So what we look at, what we teach coaches is we need to look at, number one, who the person is, what are their needs, what are their stress levels, what's their resting heart rate, and we use that to reverse engineer the process to design their program. So, for instance, if you have someone that is just chronically stressed out, has everything going against them in life, they hate their job, maybe their relationships are out of whack, there's a lot of things that just scream stress, then we would likely make some concessions and put them in more of a biased training split where we're actually going to bias more conditioning, more aerobic work, still in conjunction with strength work. And it will, in that case, likely come from a full body split. Now, as you go kind of down the rabbit hole of like, how many times a week is someone, can they train? What is their background? What are their stress levels? What are we presenting in terms of their foundational movement patterns, things like that? Then we use all those tools to reverse engineer what the right split is. So for me to say like, oh, the right split is this, then that wouldn't be true because we know that people need varying levels of both aerobic development and strength work. And we know that most people are chronically stressed out. What I will say is that if I ran into 10 people on the street, 8 of them would be a good fit for full body training. Conversely, if I ran into 10 people on the street, 2 people would be a good fit for upper lower split. So, you know, law of averages, full body is going to hit the mark better for most people. Now, you have outliers. You have people like yourself that are training for physique. Full body, not going to be the best, in my opinion, for that. I know that there's plenty of old school bodybuilders that said full body is the best for what they did. You know, Mike Mentzer comes to mind. But even still, you know, if you're training, your number one goal is your physique, then using a body part split is going to be in your best course of action. So, you know, again, kind of a lot of ways to determine where to go. But I think that if we're looking at the whole person first, we use that to bias maybe different qualities of fitness. You know, on the other end, you might have someone that just like doesn't present anything off the charts. Maybe they've got pretty good resting heart rate, and maybe they want to gain strength and size. We could bias, you know, using like you said, like a lower upper split for someone like that. And, you know, for how long you do it, there's no like determined amount of time. We might go back and forth. We might do, you know, a lower upper split for 12 weeks. We might go into a full body split where we can have a little bit more conditioning balance for 12 weeks and so on and so forth. And these are things that, you know, I teach coaches because at the end of the day, if they can keep clients long-term, it's much easier to keep clients than it is to gain new ones. So we want to keep them progressing long-term. And these are ways that we do that. These are ways that we are on the cutting edge with the people we're working with. So they are progressing and they are evolving with what we're doing. Whatever they're doing right now might not be the thing that they do forever.
Yeah, that's so true. And even to your point of needing more of this versus that, when you have a client for a long period of time, those aspects change for that same individual. The season of life they're in, the focus they're in, the amount of stress they have in their lifestyle. So many different factors change. Which actually brings me to one of the points I had, which was just like aerobic training. If you could give us like, now I will say this could be a whole entire podcast itself, but I'd love for you to, maybe even explain the difference between, in some ways that I'm sure there is, some ways I'm sure there's not technically, but like cardio versus conditioning. Like when you say conditioning, you know, versus cardio, I look at them differently in a certain way. And I'd love to hear your definition. I don't think my definition is like, this is what science says is the difference. It's just how I view them and how I program them, what the purpose is behind them. So I'd be curious of yours with that and just maybe like a quick, you know, what's the importance of this? Cause I think that's something that a lot of people, over the years let go of, when they want strength or muscle, they think they shouldn't do any cardio. And then also too, a lot of people, I think just, they assume that strength training is like, that's what you do for fat loss. That's what you do for muscle. That's what you do for strength. Yeah. But you've shed light on it. I do see a lot more people accepting and admitting that it is really important to work on aerobic training. So what's the difference between cardio and conditioning and why is it so important?
Well, I will tell you that I use conditioning as the way I talk about aerobic work. I use the word conditioning because I think that there is some elements to it that can be, I guess, if you wanted to really like kind of segregate the two and say like, well, what's the difference between the two? I think conditioning as a whole has more utility. There's more things that are potentially happening. Cardio is kind of I think for a lot of people, they think of cardio as kind of like an afterthought. Cardio is what's the root of cardio? Obviously the heart, right? So for heart health, and they think of it as what? We go to the gym and we walk on the treadmill or a Stairmaster for 30 minutes, right? Which in some ways is fine, but I do think that coaches can do a better job with it because I think about it like this, Cody. I want to know what someone's going to do long term. So if I say, so and so, go to the gym and do 30 to 40 minutes of cardio. It's like, do they really put the emphasis on that because it's not set up like a training session? Does it feel or look, it's not packaged the same way. And it looks like kind of like the coach was lazy almost. So it's like, well, if they don't put the effort in, then why am I going to? And I think a lot of people just kind of skip those and they say, all right, I got to get my strength. My strength training is where I get leaner. It's where I improve my metabolism. And it's where all the great things happen. And sure, we know that to be true. But if you don't have an intact aerobic system, then there is some low-hanging fruit there. And most people need some development. You know, even if they want to prioritize more strength and hypertrophy, there still should be some level of aerobic conditioning in there. So I think when you put it together and it's more conditioning, if you will, it resembles a training session. So it's not just 30 to 40 minutes of cardio of your choice. It's, hey, we do 5 rounds of cyclical body weight, maybe a light load of carry. We do some things in there that resemble training. The perception is completely different. And I actually, funny, I did a test with this on my training subscription last year. I did 3 weeks of your choice of cardio. I didn't call it cardio, but it was conditioning. And I said, bias cyclical pieces. So your air bike, rower, air runner, whatever you have at your disposal. And I looked at the compliance scores when I did that versus when I actually plug a real conditioning session in where I tell them exactly what I want them to do. And it was 50% difference. So no, I don't know if people were just not logging, but what I saw was that people adhere to what I give them when it looks like training. So when you think about this, if it looks like training, the perception is I need to do it. It's important. And they do it when that happens. Now, how I deliver that is up to me. So I can trick them. I will have people do almost all cyclical work for 40 to 50, sometimes even 60 minutes. But I'll weave in some other things where it looks like training. So I just trick them into doing cyclical work, but I weave in some other things like body weight, maybe some light kettlebell, just to break it up. So we might do a total of 30 minutes that's done cyclically, which is the best delivery for improving aerobic capacity is doing it with cyclical components. And I'll tell you why in a second. But when we weave in some other things, it doesn't look like that. It doesn't look boring. It doesn't look like the coach just like took a nap and said, hey, just do what you want that day. It looks like an actual training session. So that's something I've found to be, I guess for me, it's probably more of a unique answer to be more conditioning versus just cardio. And I don't, where does your, kind of curious to hear where you fall with that?
Yeah. I mean, I would agree 100%. I haven't said that or thought of it that way, but I could see that being so true, even in my own experience. I look at the difference between cardio and conditioning basically the same way. I look at conditioning as a as an intentional training session. I look at cardio, you know, I look at it two ways. Like if I'm just thinking cardio for just general heart health and total health, like we're going to get that from the conditioning as well, but we can just also focus on your step count. Like let's just make sure that's there. If I'm using cardio, I'm thinking incline treadmill, elliptical, stair stepper, the bike, and it's for 30 minute, 40 minute, 45 minute duration at this speed, at this incline. And the sole purpose of it is to burn more calories. I have a specific timeline I'm taking somebody through a fat loss phase with, but this is not like a long-term thing. This is like, we know when we have to get you ready for your fat loss phase to be over. I'm going to use the minimum amount, but I'm going to escalate this up to get us to the goal. And then I'm going to like decrease it as we reverse out of this, because I know you're not going to continue doing this forever. Whether if you want to go on a walk a few times, like I personally like going on walks, but I don't do it on a treadmill. I go outside, listen to a podcast. I walk. Like that's just what I do at night to wind down. I don't count that as cardio. I count that as I'm getting my steps in. I'm creating some space. You know, it's just, it's totally different. So I look at it the same way. If I'm programming something for performance to influence their training, to influence like a long-term goal, it's conditioning, it's a training session, it's usually cyclical, and it's like there's just more intention behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the key differentiator between the two. And, you know, if we think about this, like what's going to produce the best result? If you're improving your aerobic capacity, maybe downgrading stress and improving your resting heart rate's a goal, is cyclical the best route? We know it is, but the problem is that it is really hard to do 60 minutes straight of cyclical. Yeah. I don't care who you are. Maybe you're an endurance athlete. I'm sure there's people out there listening. Like you're an endurance athlete and you go for an hour run. I am not one of those people, and I don't work with most of the people I work with would rather watch paint dry than run for 60 minutes or do air bike for 60 minutes. So those are things they have to consider. And I look at a lot from my own perspective. A lot of the people I work with are like me. So if I won't do it for 60 minutes, I don't like someone making someone else do it for 60 minutes. But having them like kind of slice it up with other things, it's a lot more feasible and it goes a lot faster. There's, you know, I find creative ways to do these workouts where it goes faster. It feels like more, you know, the psychological aspect of it's like, oh, it feels like I'm actually training. And those are things that are important, but you know, what we need to be mindful of with this is that yes, number one, it should be predominantly cyclical because we can manage our heart rate. We can keep blood pressure down. We can keep lactate, down. And those are all things that are going to help with, you know, improving mitochondria, adding more mitochondria, improving surface area of capillaries, being able to get more eccentric hypertrophy of the heart, you know, being able to, you know, again, get more cavity volume as opposed to higher heart rate where there's more constriction. And we don't get the same adaptations that we would get if we were just doing a sustainable 30 to 40 minute on the elliptical. So those are things that have to take place. Now, when you have conditioning pieces that are the goal is, you know, again, cardiac output, we need to make sure that we're not like having someone use a heavy barbell or a trap bar farmer carry. It needs to be light. The muscular contraction, the level of contractions need to be relatively low. Otherwise, we drive blood pressure up and then we kind of reduce what we're looking to happen. So those are things that we need to be mindful of as coaches. But I always say, Cody, I would rather trade a little bit of results for fun. If I can get someone to do my program for a year as opposed to 2 months, what do you think will win? The year or the 2 months? I say this to people all the time, and it's like, it's a no-brainer, you know, answer. So that's what I try to do with all my programs, is that we know that, you know, again, we could look at supporter research. We use that as the decision maker for everything. You could rest 3-4 minutes between every exercise. Is that fun? It's not fun.
Yeah.
No one wants to do that. If you're really disciplined and want to do that and you have the time to do that, great. But I don't have the time. Most people I work with don't have the time. And you know what? We will rest 3-4 minutes between a big lift, a heavy squat. But to do that between all of our exercise, between my, you know, my cable curls and cable crunches, like, I'm not resting 3 or 4 minutes. Sorry. It's not happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%. I think I agree completely, man. I think that's a great breakdown. And I also glad you threw the fun piece out there, because I think that's it's something people neglect. And if you're inexperienced in the gym, or you haven't hired other coaches and you haven't been doing this a long time, you neglect it because you just think about what's on paper. But you got to be able to put that into like practical application, even if it's just in your mind while you're writing it down, because somebody's going to do this. So, man, I could probably keep going on and on this topic. It's a really good topic. We'll have to bring you back on soon and crank through some more, because I think we could take this further. We could go deeper. But for everybody listening, where can they find your content, your certification, all that kind of stuff? So I can put the links in the description.
Yeah, Jason Brown Coaching, Instagram, Jason Brown Coaching, YouTube, jasonbrowncoaching.com website. And we have a group for coaches, a private Facebook group. It's called Fitness Programming Simplified. We've got about 1,200 coaches there. We just started it a few months ago, and we're doing a lot in there. But we just did a 3-day boot camp in there. A lot of great stuff. If you're a Fit Pro, check that out. It's completely free. You know, doesn't cost anything to you other than your time to consume some of the stuff in there. But yeah, that's about it. And you know, I think at the end of the day, sometimes, you know, if you're someone that's just like looking to improve your fitness, the simplicity, the basics always win. I know you're a big fan of the basics, and that's what a lot of these programs I'm reviewing are not doing. When I see, it's funny, I saw Garage Strength, who is, he's got a great YouTube channel. I don't know if you know Dane from Garage Strength, but phenomenal YouTube channel. I reviewed his program, and as soon as I saw it, I'm like, this is a good program. I could just feel it was very simple. There was restraint. It wasn't the kitchen sink of volume. It made sense. And those programs, when I see them as a coach who's been doing this for 2 decades, I see it and I'm like, this is a good program. I probably didn't even need to even go through it. I could tell just from the first day it was a good program. And those are the ones that often people see at first glance. And they're like, oh, it's not enough. But if you master that stuff and you do it well, and like we were talking about, if you're true with how many reps in reserve, and you're really pushing those work sets, if you will, there's a lot of ground to be made up. You don't have to kill yourself to get better. You can do a lot with a little.
Yeah. I love that. So we just shot a YouTube video of my lower body day yesterday, and there was 4 exercises, 5 if you include the core exercise at the end. And it was like, I talked about this exact thing, because I agree. So many people overcomplicate it. And if you get really good, and for coaches, if you're an in-person trainer, if you get really good at coaching the basics, your clients will be blown away with you, because there's not much on paper. You're doing simple exercises, and you make it in a good way, because this can be bad too, making it the hardest session ever, but it can be the hardest session ever in a good way with the most simple stuff. So great answer, man. I'm going to link Jason's content. It's really easy. I love that. Jason Brown Coaching, just anywhere. That's how mine is too. But I'll link that in the description, guys, so you can check everything out. Make sure that you give us a 5-star rating review. If you like this show, share it on your Instagram story. Tag Jason and I so we can thank you for listening. Share it on our end, and we will catch you guys next time.